This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. She's known as Mek Tun Tung among locals. Dr. Chen Pelf Nyong is the co-founder of the Turtle Conservation Society of Malaysia and is a freshwater turtle researcher and conservationist based in Kemaman in Terengganu. And she has long been working to help in the recovery of depleted wild populations of turtles, with particular reference to freshwater turtles in Malaysia. And she joins me now to discuss her work in conservation and also how the COVID-19 pandemic is affecting conservation work of turtles in Malaysia. Welcome, Pelf. How are you today?
Hello, Juliet. I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm very well. Lovely to speak to you again. It's been a couple of years. Since we last caught up. But how are things at the Turtle Conservation Society of Malaysia? How is everything going?
We're doing okay now. Well, despite, you know, the pandemic, we're doing okay. We still have a job. I still have a job. I still have a staff, and I still get help. And our local villagers, they're still helping us with everyday conservation work. So, yeah, we're doing okay. Well, to say that we're not affected would be a lie. But, we're doing okay.
Okay, but let's talk about the impacts that the pandemic had. You know, how did that affect the work that you were doing, both in, you know, research and also in conservation?
Let's start with research. We actually have a project plan, a 2-year project, you know, from last year, you know, down to this year, but that has to be put on hold. So, this year we are planning to collect some sand samples from the hatchery, from the terrapin eggs hatchery, to study the fungus found in the hatchery. And we're basically trying to understand whether the fungus contribute to the hatchability of these eggs. And if yes, if the fungus or the fungi species contribute to the hatchability of the eggs, how can we take care of those fungi so that we get a higher hatch rates? And this will be very useful because there are 3 river terrapin head starting facilities in the country, 4 including ours. The other 3 are run by the Department of Wildlife and National Parks. And the results from this study will be very useful in increasing the hatchability of the terrapin eggs, not just in our hatchery, but also in all the other 3 hatcheries in the country. So that will help us put more terrapin bags into river, lah.
And what about in conservation work?
Right. So the MCO was announced on the 18th, on the 16th, but it became it came into effect on the 18th. So we were lucky in a way that the terrapin nesting season had already ended before that. So we were not too affected by the beginning of the MCO. But one thing that I am glad, and I keep telling people, that I don't have to die to see that without me, the conservation project will still go on. And if you ask me, I would say this is a very big win, because for conservation projects, this is what we truly want to see, that it is sustainable. So, for example, this year with the COVID pandemic and all, we were not able to go to the village, to the kampung, to check the nests. I wasn't able to go up to the kampung to take care of the hatchlings, take care of the terrapins. In fact, I sent all our interns back, 2 of them, before the MCO. So, left without help, our local project assistants in the kampung actually... he was able to do what we expected him to do. So that was eye-opening. So our Pakcik Wazir, he's quite popular now. Pakcik Wazir was able to go to the hatchery every day, check on the nest, and he was able to change water, feed the terrapins every day. He was able to do maintenance work at the conservation center. All this without us supervising him. All this without assistance from interns. So, yeah, I think he's doing a great job. I can retire.
Hey, no. Your work is very much needed still. And I mean, that's what I wanted to talk about also, you know, just to remind people that the Conservation Society, Turtle Conservation Society, was founded in 2011. And I know, you know, at the time there was a need to start a society like this, right? Could you, I mean, just remind people about the work that you do, and maybe then you can tell us how the work has evolved, you know, in this last 9 years.
Right. Yeah. So DCS, the Little Conservation Society of Malaysia, was established in 2011 because there wasn't any agencies working with, studying and trying to protect and conserve freshwater turtles in the country. The only other agency doing this was Perhelatan. Right. And is still Perhelatan. So we established DCS to fill that gap so that we can complement each other's work. Mm-hmm. And in the last 9 years, I have seen myself developing from being a project leader, principal investigator, to somebody who initiated this community-based conservation program in the kampung, to somebody who initiated a women's empowerment program also in the kampung. We have also done a lot of education work with kids, so that's what we are going to continue doing, educating kids about the importance of saving turtles, not just freshwater turtles, but including sea turtles. So yeah, and the past 9 years have been a roller coaster ride, I must say, but none of it was as challenging as the COVID-19 pandemic.
I can imagine, my goodness.
Right. Yeah, and I have to share this also, Juliet, that in the past, we had trips, you know, we took people, guests on turtle trips, so they would come to us from overseas, from Malaysia, you know, in their chuti-chuti Malaysia road trips, they would come to us, they would visit us, and we would take them to on a turtle watching trip. We would take them out for dinner, and then at night, we'll take them on a firefly watching tour. So all these trips actually bring in a lot of, I would say, the biggest piece of the pie for our organization. Mm-hmm. But with the MCO, in effect, we were unable to carry out that kind of program. And even now in the recovery phase, I don't see us hosting any more large groups. So, right. But that's one of the challenges we are facing. To raise sufficient funding every month to cover our operational expenses.
Okay, and but you know you have been keeping busy throughout this period. I know you were involved in lots of webinars, for example. There were so many other projects that you took on. And I mean, many of the other scientists that I've been speaking to, they used this time to sort of go through all that research that they had, you know, which they couldn't quite dissect because they were busy with other things, and they used this time to analyze all the data they had collected. Was that something that you guys at TCS also did?
No. I'm going to be very honest here and vulnerable. I have used the past, 100 days to pick up on things that we were unable to do previously due to work commitments and having to be on the field most times. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't analyzing data. I have put in quite a bit of time working on our website, optimizing our website, working on email marketing. Because these are things that are very, very important to me to reach out, to continuously reach out to our followers, to people who are subscribed to our newsletters. So we want them to know that we are still here. Okay. So, right. Yeah. And that took out a big chunk of my time. Mm-hmm. Well, the webinars as well, I've been learning a lot about marketing because I don't have this background. I went to school for 30 years studying science, but, in the course of running a non-profit organization, I realized that science itself is insufficient. I have to run this like a business so that it also brings in funding so that it is sustainable in the long run. And because I have no background on marketing, so I've been spending a lot of time listening to marketing webinars and, you know, taking this opportunity to learn something new.
But that's wonderful. And that is something that, you know, how do you be a good science communicator is one thing, right? Being a good scientist is one thing. Being a good science communicator is another thing. But marketing, what you're doing, that's also really, really important to help in your conservation world. So that's wonderful that you're doing that. But just to remind people also of, you know, the many different projects that you do carry out. So, I mean, for example, I know the eggs of river terrapins. They are a critically endangered freshwater turtle species. Am I correct? And they often end up on people's plates. So I know you have a project, you know, which you've been running to protect these endangered species. Could you tell us more about that?
Right. Yes. That's the community-based river terrapin conservation project that you mentioned. It was established in 2011. At the same time, DCS was established. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea behind this conservation project is to involve the local villagers in the conservation of a critically endangered species. We see a lot of times many agencies, projects, NGOs, we go into a particular locality and we start getting people to do certain things so that we can collect the data that we want. When the project has ended, we leave that place. But then I thought this wasn't a very sustainable model. For our terrapin conservation to be sustainable, to be I wouldn't say successful, to run forever and ever, we will need the participation of the local communities. And one way to do that is to engage them from day one. So from day one, we have been engaging with a group of men. We had five in the beginning who would go to the terrapin nesting bank with us during the nesting season, mm-hmm. which is from February to March every year. Very short 1 month season, and they would bring back these eggs from the riverbank for incubation in the kampong, in the village. Mm-hmm. And after about 60 to 80 days, the hatchlings emerge, and I hire one of them, Pakiwaze, as our project assistant. So he takes care of all the terrapins in the hatchery, in the kampong. So he feeds them every day, he changes water every day, and whenever we have guests, I would invite him so that I could introduce him to our guests. Mm. But this year, from our initial group of five men, we now have 10 men, including younger men in the kampung, who are willing to work with us, who are open to the idea of working with us. So that's a win, if you ask me, from having just a small group of local men helping in the conservation work, we now have younger people interested to do this. They could easily collect the eggs. I mean, it's illegal, but they could easily collect the eggs and sell the eggs to their friends, to their neighbors. Mm. And we wouldn't know about it because, all these things happen at night. But I guess they see the importance of saving terrapins, and one way to do it is to surrender the eggs to us for incubation. So at least when we organize a terrapin release event, they are invited, the whole family is invited, and we all get to be happy to see. Mm-hmm. We will be happy seeing the fruit of our labor being released into the river.
That's wonderful. It's a very communal feeling, isn't it? Something that you all did together.
Right. And of course, it took us many years to get here because, building this rapport with the local villagers, it all takes time. None of this happened overnight. Yeah. It happened over 9 years.
Yes, because of course, it always feels like there are these outsiders coming in and telling us how to live, right? We must change our way of life, it's just like this sort of top-down approach. But that's not the approach that you took. You wanted to get them involved.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And, over the years, has that experience or has, all this time, I suppose, has that made it easier to teach people about conservation and, to help them to understand about the initiatives that you are spearheading?
I wouldn't say we are in a position to teach anybody yet, but I'm always very happy to share what we do with the local folks in Kampung Pasir Gajah. With anybody who wants to know how we started and how best to work together with the local villagers, I'm always very happy to share. So I guess when I do these sharings, if you see anything that is duplicable and you want to do that, so you're most welcome to do that, with your own projects.
Okay. And how would you say your relationship with the local community has evolved, as well during in this last 9 years?
I started with being a stranger. I stuck out like a sore thumb, really, in a very, very localized community. Mm-hmm. And these people accepted me open-heartedly. So I'm always humble, when I think back to, the days when I started this project, when I didn't know anybody in the kampung, they didn't know me. And how I am amazed at how open they were at such initiatives, conservation initiatives. This is essentially opening the door of your house and inviting somebody in. Mm-hmm. And this somebody will tell you to stop eating whatever you're eating in the kitchen.
That's right.
So that's just hard, right? But they opened their doors to me, which I'm very grateful for. And over the years, they have added me into their WhatsApp chat group, into their family group. So I sort of know what's going on in their family. And then they added me into their community groups. So I know whenever they're going to do a gotong royong in the kampung or whenever there's going to be a kenduri kawin. And I have attended numerous of these kenduri kawin, you know, wedding luncheons in the kampung, as well as kenduri baby cukur rambut. Cukur jambul.
Oh, so sweet.
Yeah, so when I get invited, I make it a point to turn up because I guess they invite me because they treat me as a family, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't simply invite a stranger to their homes. But because they invite me, the least I could do is to turn up.
Yeah.
Right? And I guess the relationship started from there, lah, from being a friend to being a family to being somebody you can work with.
That's wonderful. And I mean, that's the kind of outcome you hope for, isn't it? And it just helps so much in the work that you do in that sense, just makes it that little bit more easier, I suppose, right?
Yes, it does. It does. Because it's hard to speak to people who are not receptive to your ideas or your suggestions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And having these people as family makes it a lot easier. You know, every time I go to the kampung or if I have a new project I want to share with them, they know that I'm not there to cheat them. They know that suggestions coming from us would be for the benefit of many parties, including themselves, including the local villagers, including the terrapins.
Yes,
so,
of course.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So yes, yeah, you're right that it does help that we have a very friendly relationship with the locals.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you've also been, you know, through the work that the Turtle Conservation Society does, you've also helped to improve the livelihoods of some of the members of the community. Maybe you could share a little bit about that.
Oh, right. The Community Involvement Program.
Yes. Yeah.
I initiated that just last year. So it's a new program. We started with, I learned how to make a DIY lotion on YouTube, watching YouTube videos. And then I bought these raw materials online. And then I went to the kampung and I taught the local women how to make your own lotion, you know, without the chemicals, without drugs and without SLS, you know.
Mm.
And many of them came to that lotion making class and we even discussed about the possibility of using this lotion to replace junk food that is given out during kenduri kawin. So I thought that was very brilliant and I was very happy that the women, you know, took this initiative and to discuss this with me. So I'm able to see how we can materialize this idea, this business idea.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're successful, of course, I hope that they will be successful. This could very well be a model for a lot of other young people who are planning wedding ceremonies, wedding lunches. Because, you know, I receive this junk food each time I go to a kenduri kawin,
mm-hmm.
and I don't eat the junk food. I end up throwing them away.
Yeah.
It's wasteful, but then they're not exactly nutritious food, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But if you tell me that I go to a kenduri kawin and you give me a small container of DIY lotion, I would use it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't throw it away into the bin just like that. I would use it. And that just, you know, one story that came out from the community empowerment program. And then I also started the sewing program. I don't sew, but I also started the sewing program with the ladies. We started with having 3 women in the sewing group. We now have more than 10 of them. And these are the ladies who are fashioning our terrapin batiks into products that you can actually use, such as the drawstring bags, the travel pouches, the straw pouches that you see on our website.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, whenever somebody buys something from our website, they are actually also directly benefiting these local women in the kampung. And in the past 100 days, we were unable to go to the kampung, but we have been receiving orders, you know.
Hmm.
So something, I must be doing something correct. people still come to our website and place orders for bags. So there are some products that we need to replenish. So we'll go to the kampung tomorrow and discuss with the ladies, you know, what other new products that we could potentially produce. So I'm now also doing product development.
Marketing, product development, scientists.
Right. What is the best size to do a cloth mask, you know?
That's the next thing to look for. But, you know, just speaking about, we forgot to talk about the turtles themselves, you know. What, you know, for anyone who doesn't understand, we see a lot of turtles, maybe we don't understand what sort of threats are being faced. So maybe you could share some of the most pressing issues that are faced by our Malaysian turtles.
Malaysian turtles in general are, most of them are endangered, and a couple of species are critically endangered. So we have 22 species of turtles in Malaysia. 4 of them are sea turtles. So that leaves 18 species of freshwater turtles and tortoises, and these include the soft-shell turtles and the terrestrial tortoises that you find on highlands. Yeah, so we have quite a big diversity of turtles in the country. But in terms of river terrapins, because we work with them, so I would like to focus on them. The main threat would be the collection and the consumption of the eggs. Because you see, the river terrapins, they take 20 years to become mature. So that means it takes a hatchling 20 years to become mature before they can come back to lay eggs. So that is a long time. 20 years is a long time. And even if we successfully hatch them now, we release as many as possible into the river, it would still take them 20 years before they come back. And what happens in these 20 years? So there are so many other threats in the river that they could fall prey to, you know. For example, let's say sand mining. Sand mining projects in the river will alter or destroy nesting habitats for adults to come up to lay eggs. That's one thing. So if you mine sand from a place where terrapins come up to nest, emerge to nest, where do these terrapins go to lay eggs? They cannot lay eggs in the water, right? So they don't have a choice. And then we have also villagers who put out nets in the river, or any form of fishing gear. They're meant to catch fish. I totally understand this. But sometimes terrapins are also caught in this fishing gear. And if you don't go check your fishing gear regularly, upwards of an hour, the terrapins that are caught in your fishing gear could drown. So it will be, okay, imagine this. The terrapins take 20 years to become mature. And if a 15-year-old terrapin get caught in your fishing gear and drowns, it will be such a big waste, because they're almost there. They're almost an adult and they're almost able to come back to lay eggs. But then now we are one terrapin short. So that's just, it's just hard.
Yeah, and has the number of terrapin landings and nesting grounds, has that dropped drastically over the past few years?
Well, the numbers are declining. So that is a fact that we cannot run away from. For example, when we started this project in 2011, we had about 1,000 eggs. We managed to collect about 1,000 eggs. And that number dropped to 400 the next year. And then it dropped to 330. And then it dropped to 200. But you know what? Last year in 2019, we managed to collect 1,000 eggs. And then this year, we collected 650 eggs. So yes, I agree with you that the trend, the downward trend is there. But I guess it also depends on our efforts, you know, the efforts that we put in. So this year, last year, we had more men down at the riverbanks, and we covered 4 nesting banks. So I think that makes more sense, right? To say that the pattern is declining, but the number of eggs that we get every year also depends on the effort that we put in. The number of men, guys, I can get to work with us, and the number of terrapin nesting banks that we could cover in a particular year.
Okay. And maybe you can explain what happens after you've secured those eggs. I mean, what is the kind of process that, you know, happens after that?
Right. So the local men, they will secure these eggs for us, and the next morning they would bring these eggs to us in the kampung, in the hatchery, and we would immediately put these eggs into the hatchery. We dig the holes and we put these eggs in, we cover it with riverine sand, and then we wait for about 60 to 80 days before the terrapins emerge themselves. And upon emerging, we would weigh and measure them, and then we put them into a heat starting pond, and then Pakcik Wazir will take care of them. Before we release them into the river, we will insert a microchip into the terrapin's leg. into each terrapin. So that is for individual identification, not so much for tracking. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't be able to tell where they've been to in the, you know, when we release them. Mm. But if we ever see them again, dead or alive, we could scan them and we would be able to tell who it is, what year it was hatched.
Okay.
Like identification. Mm-hmm.
And that's helpful, you know, for you for collecting data for the work that you do, of course.
Yes, that's what we do in the past 9 years.
Okay, and you know, have you been noticing any trends in that sense in the last few years?
No is the short answer to it. like I mentioned earlier, it's also the effort that we put in. Some years we have more men down on the riverbank. Some years we have fewer men, and some years we cover 4 nesting banks. Some years we cover only 1. Right, but if we just take a look at our nesting bank, the one that we have been going to since 2011. In the beginning, there was a drastic drop in the number of eggs we were able to secure. But in the past 2-3 years, we are able to see that no, it's not as simple as number of eggs dropping. It's not as simple as that. There are a lot of other factors, and one of it is this our effort as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there's so many variables involved, so it's really hard to see patterns in that sense, lah.
Correct. Yeah. So the patterns, I would say, is not that visible. You cannot just come in and look at our data sheet and say, oh, we are losing the terrapins. Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree with you that we are losing the terrapins slowly, but I must also say that because of conservation efforts have only been running for 9 years, so we're not there yet to see them coming back. You know, the terrapins that we have released earlier, we don't see them coming back to lay eggs yet. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I'm optimistic lah. even though their numbers are low and they are listed as critically endangered, we are hopeful that with the collaboration with the local villagers, we are able to secure more eggs. So yeah, let's just cross our fingers.
Yeah, it's an ongoing thing, and yeah, you just do the best that you can do. But you know, very quickly also, you know, now that we are in the recovery stage of the MCO, you know, tourists are going to start coming back. I mean, local travel is allowed. Can you share some ways that you're accepting travelers back? Can people still come and, you know, participate in the projects that you have?
Yes, definitely. We are slowly opening up our terrapin conservation center in Kampung Pasir Gajah. Mm-hmm. And previously, we used to take visitors as well by appointment, and we will continue doing that for groups not exceeding 20 pax. So for a short 2-3 hour program, we could take you on a tour, like a guided tour to the Terrapin Conservation Center, and that includes a gallery that we have set up just 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that serves like an education hub, you know, for people who want to learn about terrapins and tortoises. And we have terrapin shells and specimens in the gallery, like a museum. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll also take our guests, our visitors, on a tour to the hatchery, and we tell you the story of how these terrapins came about, you know, how the locals go to the riverbanks, collect these eggs, bring them back. And if they are keen, we will also take them on to the riverbank to release the hatchlings, the terrapins. So in the past, we used to keep all these terrapins until the end of the year, where we would organize a large-scale terrapin release event. Mm. But looking at our timeline now, it looks like we won't be able to organize or host any large-scale events in the near future. So we are offering these visitors, if they want to release the terrapins, then we'll take them and the terrapins to the riverbank, so they get like a little private release.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
Uh-huh. In small groups.
Okay. And, you know, and you have a lot of other projects as well. You know, if, I mean, maybe you can tell us a bit of some other projects. And also, you know, if anyone's interested, how can they best get in touch with you?
Right. Sure. We have a functional website. You could just visit our website at www.turtleconservationsociety.org.my. And we have an internship program for young people, fresh graduates who want to join us. We also need volunteer help. That depends on those times when we are extremely busy and we need additional 2-3 pairs of hands. Mm-hmm. And that's seasonal. But in addition to the day trips, we also organized 2-day trips or 3-day trips, you know, and these are more for college students, university students. Homeschooling, the homeschooling community in Malaysia is quite a big group. Mm-hmm. If you or anybody would like a more in-depth tour to the projects that we do, and at the same time you want to learn about turtles and the ecology and how they are contributing to the ecosystem or how you can be a part of it, then we have all this information on our website.
Okay, all right. And some of the things are seasonal, so just go to the website and I'm sure all the information is there on, you know, when's the best time to come, those sorts of things.
Right, yes. Well, go to our shop, buy our merchandise, and at the same time support turtle conservation as well as the ladies in the local communities. So that will be most helpful. So instead of asking for a donation, because with the pandemic, a lot of people are out of jobs. A lot of people are thinking about ways to raise funds. You know, a lot of people are thinking about ways to bring in money. Mm-hmm. So instead of just asking for a donation, which you will only receive a tax deductible receipt in return, we are inviting you to check out our merchandise in our shop, online shop. And if you like any of the products that you see, or you can, you know, you can buy them and use them as Christmas gifts, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Please do so. So at least the donation that you make, you receive something in return.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you do still have the Terrapin adoption program. Yes.
Yes, we do. For 35 ringgit, you are able to symbolically adopt a terrapin. We will raise them for you. You don't get to take it home. And if you plan a road trip to the east coast of Peninsula Malaysia and you decide to visit the terrapins, we could certainly take you and the terrapins to the riverbank and you could release your adopted terrapin into the river. Otherwise, we will do that for you.
Okay. All right. So again, all the information is available on the website. You know, any last message you'd like to leave us with, you know, with regard to turtle conservation in Malaysia, you know, why people should be interested, you know, should take this issue seriously?
Oh, wow. That's going to be another 30 minutes. But, right. Yes, a lot of people have said that, you know, why do you save turtles when a lot of people are out of jobs? But I guess there are certain things that you do that you have the knowledge, the experience, the capabilities to do. So I guess the message here would be do what you are best at. So if you're a photographer, you can help NGOs, you know, even you can help to the conservation organizations with photographs or videos. Or if you are a writer, then you can help us write blog articles or just write about us on Facebook and it goes viral. there are a lot of things that people can do. And, volunteer. I'm not sure. I had a hesitation just now because I'm not very sure if conservation organizations are open for volunteers these days. Mm-hmm. But it's okay. Write to them. Ask them. A lot of people need help these days, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you are at a position where you can give help, it is most appreciated.
Yeah, because like you said, it's not necessarily science, right? It could be marketing. It could be website design.
Yes, and we don't receive applications from marketing students. Maybe they think that ours is a conservation organization, so yeah. We only accept students with a biodiversity background. But that's not true. We also accept students of various backgrounds, and we are like a teaching NGO. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy to teach students, fresh graduates, what I know. And in return, if there's any skills that you learn throughout your studies that you think could benefit a small organization like ours, we would definitely appreciate that knowledge.
Okay. All right. So again, you know, if you'd like to find out more about the work that PELF is doing, you just head to turtleconservationsociety.org.my. Thank you so much, PELF, for joining me today.
Thank you, Juliet, for having me today.
I've been speaking to Dr. Chen PELF Nyok. She's the co-founder of the Turtle Conservation Society of Malaysia, and she was telling us more about the work that she does. If you miss any part of the interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. Or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.